What's in a sermon? A young and newly ordained minister was not being well received by his congregation. He did not deliver very good sermons. And so a deacon of the church attended the service one Sunday to hear him out. And after listening to another disappointing sermon, he asked the young man, "Why did you go into the ministry?" The young man thought for a moment and he explained that he had been a farmer. And he'd been out plowing in the fields one day, and he was studying the clouds, and there were some beautiful cloud formations. And one was shaped like a pea, and one was shaped like a C. And he said, "I knew immediately it was a message from God to preach Christ." The deacon thought for a moment, and he said, "Did you ever think that maybe it meant to plant corn?" Well, I'm certainly not here today to preach about Christ, or to plant corn either. But why am I here? Well, I've been asking that question myself all week long. This came about because I participate in an adult program here at the church, Writing Your Life Story. And I sat down one Sunday afternoon following one of Roger's sermons, and I wrote a story reflecting on my life and what it is measured by. A few weeks later, a few weeks later, I read it to a friend at a longtime Unitarian. And he listened, and when I was done, he said, "Bill," he said, "I think that's pretty good. You should expand upon that and share it with others." So I thanked him for his comments, and I forgot about that. And then I attended a worship committee meeting this spring, and the discussion was about completing the summer schedule of speakers. And Rick Sandler reminded me this morning that nobody asked me to do this. I volunteered to do this. And it seemed like a better idea then than it does now. But it's not about how I became a Unitarian. It's about how being a Unitarian has subtly changed me in the way I live my life. I am still a UU in training. And if this talk today seems like I'm talking a little bit too much about me and my life, it's because I want it to be about how I used to be and how I am now and how I feel now. I don't know how many of you have ever driven across the state of Kansas on I-70, but let me assure you, it is a very long drive across the plains. There is not a lot to see. You might see something off on the far horizon and drive for 20 miles only to discover that that's a farm silo. Excuse me. But one of the things you will find along the way across Kansas are fields of sunflowers. And I love sunflowers. The photograph on the front of your order of service today is a metal art sunflower that's right outside the door to our home. Because I really do love sunflowers. And when I would drive across Kansas occasionally, I would stop and look at those sunflowers, and I found them to be invigorating. I also find coming to church on Sunday morning to be invigorating. I love coming here with Mary Fran, socializing with all of you, and I love listening to the sermons, and I always try to take at least one thing away from those sermons. Our Sunday routine includes always going to lunch afterwards, and we often talk about those sermons at some length. And again, I find that to be a very invigorating process. And a little bit of what I'm talking about is getting something out of a sermon. How many of you were here for Katie Colbert 2 weeks ago and her self-image sermon? So how many of you went home and looked in the mirror and said, "You know, I'm okay"? I didn't either. So it's So this is about what I get out of sermons and maybe what you get out of sermons. What really nails me? There are two sermons in particular that resonate with me. On this past January 4th, the first Sunday of this year, Roger's sermon was entitled, "Using the Time We Have." And in that sermon, Roger referenced a book called The Purpose-Driven Life, written by Rick Warren, a minister. And Roger quoted from that book, "It is not about you. The purpose of your life is far greater than your own personal fulfillment, your peace of mind, or even your happiness. It's far greater than your family, your career, or even your wildest dreams and ambitions." That was a lot to think about, but I did think about it, and that's when I sat down and wrote that story that I shared with the group. And I wrote these words. Roger recently gave a sermon on the purpose of life. At least that's what I got out of it. Maybe it was about one's goals in life. They are two different things. The purpose of life is a universal question pondered by many of history's greatest minds, and maybe there is a consensus on why we are all here, but that subject is way beyond me. However, I do more and more contemplate the purpose of my own life. This is no easy matter. It seems to me that the question depends on just when you are asking yourself the question. Wasn't my life's purpose different as a grade school student than it is now? Wasn't my goal to simply get out of grade school and into junior high? And along the way, I hopefully learned the four R's of education, reading, writing, and arithmetic. And the fourth R for a kid from West Virginia was the route to Akron, Ohio. Likewise, junior high leads to high school, and wasn't the purpose life to find myself socially? I mean, how does a 6-foot-plus skinny kid with acne and braces find himself socially? What does a girl want in a boyfriend? And does that girl have all the hormonal issues that I did? And doesn't studying get in the way of all that? I mean, after all, I graduated with a 2.01 acume, and I was 235th in a class of 415 people. I was very proud of that. I was better than at least 200 other people. Didn't matter. I wasn't going to go to college anyway. So Marine Corps, here I come. Paris Island, boot camp, drill instructors. I'd been in boot camp for 2 hours and was already deathly afraid of my drill instructor. My head had been shaved. We were being measured for utilities and uniforms, and nothing seemed to fit me. And suddenly, a drill instructor appeared in front of me, and he says, "Private, why doesn't God like you?" Now, I had only been in boot camp for 2 hours, but I knew there was no right answer to that question. I said, "Sir, I do not understand." And he said, "Well, Private, God gave you this skinny neck and these skinny arms and these long, skinny legs and those big, skinny, size 13 feet. But why didn't he give you a body?" He said, "Don't worry about it, Private, because God will give you a body." And he says, "And I'm God." So I gained over 30 pounds in the longest 13 weeks of my life. It sure changed the purpose of my life at that point. But okay, I'm through boot camp and I assimilate into life in the Marine Corps. Combat infantry training, radio school, transfer to 2nd Tank Battalion, transfer to 8th Engineers. And how long before I get out? 3 years. Wow. Okay, so I only have 1,094 days left. And so it went. So the common purpose from grade school through high school and the Marine Corps was really just to survive. And then I remember becoming really excited when I was a short timer. And that's when you have under 100 days left in your enlistment. But now I was worried about what I was going to do when I get out. So I returned to Akron, Ohio. And I got some odd jobs, but nothing you would want for a career. One of my jobs was standing on top of a ladder on the back of a truck as they drove around parking lots, and I was cleaning the lights at the top of all the posts in the parking lot. I didn't think I was going to get rich doing that. And then serendipity. My parents' next-door neighbor was a lady named Catherine Vigso, and she asked me if I'd thought about going to college. And I said, well, I'd thought about it. And she was a guidance counselor at the local university, and she says, why don't you come and see me tomorrow? And I did. And when I walked out of her office, I was registered to start school. And that probably, it sounds very serendipity, but that's how I got started in my education. I was registered at the University of Akron. I got a full-time job at the AAA, working midnight to 8, and I carried a full load in the daytime. And I graduated in 4 years. I hated all of it. But I was, after all, a survivor. And when I graduated, I actually had a job waiting for me because I was a very desirable recruit. I was 4A. I had my military obligation was satisfied at a time when Vietnam was going hot and heavy. So for the first time, my goals were to do more than survive. I went to work for Travelers Insurance Company, and I flourished in a world where I met thoughtful, professional people, all WASPs, of course. My purpose in life changed from survival to climbing the corporate ladder. So I worked very hard, was diligent, and moved up the line. I don't know where I thought I was going. I somehow knew I wasn't going to be president. But wherever I was going, I wanted to get there as fast as I could. By that time, I was married with kids, and I wanted to do well by them. This were my three kids. On the left is Kathy, who we adopted when she's 8 months old. She's Korean. And then Billy and my daughter Meredith. Doing well by them meant doing well at my work. So I kept working hard, traveling a lot. For 20 years of my career, I was on an airplane every week. I worked with headhunters. I changed jobs. I moved my family some 8 times. And was it worth it? Well, there's no right answer to that question. But one can only ponder that and really only figure it out later on, I think. Now, I'm going to change subjects briefly here, but I love my father. But I don't recall that my dad and I ever sat down and discussed the purpose of life. He was a Depression-era child who saw the world differently than I did, but he did have a work ethic. His life mantra was to get a job, work hard, and take care of his family. That was his advice to me. He didn't think much of my work ethic as a kid. I can't tell you how many times I heard him say, you'll never amount to anything, or you'll never be worth a damn. He was realistic about his lot in life. He knew he would never be wealthy, but he always figured that if he wanted something bad enough, he could save and probably have that. What I'm trying to say is, I guess, that my purposes or my goals were always related to material things. Bigger house, cars, taking care of the family. And then there was a bump in the road. By 1992, I was making good money, living in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, just north of Philadelphia. There was a lot I didn't like about that particular job and about my location and about my commute. And I was recruited by a company in Des Moines, Iowa, to be president of the marketing company. There was no increase in pay, but I figured that the cost of living in Des Moines, Iowa was better than in Philadelphia. And I really thought this was a perfect situation. There was a lot of things I liked about the prospects of the job, the prospects of that company. I thought it was perfect, but it was not to be. I reported directly to the chairman of the board. I soon found out that we were oil and water, and he was a brutal man. And I knew immediately that I had made a mistake. Long story longer, I lasted 6 months and was fired 2 weeks before I made my first house payment in Des Moines, Iowa. I was fired at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I knew. I got a phone call and said, meet us in the conference room, the HR conference room, and I knew. And a funny thing happened, because as I drove home, I was absolutely ecstatic. I didn't know where my next paycheck would come from, but I couldn't have been happier. Now, this happened to be the very first day of school for my two daughters in Des Moines, Iowa. When they got home from school, I asked them to sit down, that I had to talk with them. And one of them said, is something wrong, Dad? And I thought for a moment, and I said, let's put it this way. Don't make a lot of friends. So 5 months later, I accepted a job at the University of Missouri at a 52% cut in pay. I moved to Columbia, Missouri, and never looked back. I was hired as the director of risk and insurance management. I knew that there was a glass ceiling in that position. I would never go any higher in academia. But it was a new job, it was a new profession to me, and it was a college town environment, and I loved it. And then I was retired. I was a militaristic, right-leaning conservative, had never voted for a Democrat in my life. And then Mary Fran came into my life. Mary Fran happened to be president of her UU church in New Jersey at the time. I remember asking her very early on, when did you become so liberal? And I said, I thought she was too smart to be a Democrat. Somehow we survived. She never actually tried to change me or tell me I was wrong, but we would go to church and we would read articles in the paper and we would have discussions. And then mostly things happened because I started attending the UU church along with Mary Fran up in New Jersey. So now I sit and ponder the meaning of my life. I still don't get it. But what is the purpose of my life? I don't get that either. It's more what I don't know. Why was I so late to become concerned about the homeless? Or why is a hungry person in Florida needier than a hungry illegal immigrant? And why is the American dream not so good when it's taken to the extreme? How much wealth does the 1% need? And have I left the world a better place than I found it? Am I a failure? What is the purpose of my life? Whatever it is, it's different now than it was then. And I'm not sure I'm smart enough to know. And I think my purpose now is just to ponder these things. And maybe that's good enough now, and maybe I'll recognize the difference tomorrow. So one can get a lot out of a sermon. All of those thoughts came from Roger's sermon on January 4th this year. On January 26, 2014, Reverend Michael McGee delivered a wonderful sermon here. His subject was forgiveness. And he said, only truth heals a relationship. And he added, forgiveness is the process that reshapes our relationships. So as you know, I have three children. They are, of course, different. And I love them all very much, like only a father does. And I had a pretty good relationship with two of them. But my relationship with the third one, my daughter Meredith, was awkward at best. Meredith is the youngest and I believe was the most affected by the relocations caused by my work and the most affected by a failed marriage. It's not that her mother and I didn't try. We married each other twice. We both believe it was a case of making the same mistake twice. But during this process, Meredith became involved in drugs and became an addict. She would call me at 2 or 3 in the morning and scream vulgarities, told me I ruined her life. Her mother and I did the usual things, but there were many nights when we thought that late phone call would be a call you don't want to get. Meredith pretty much got straight on her own with the help of a young man who's now her husband. Our relationship was rocky, and it was awkward. Having just an ordinary conversation was difficult. But back to Reverend McGee, he said, "May no heart be troubled by things unsaid, and we must forgive ourselves for being imperfect." A week later, I bought a copy of that CD, or a CD of his sermon from Louise King out in the courtyard. I listened to it several times, and I wrote a letter. And among other things in that letter, I said, "Dear Meredith, I owe you an apology. I am sorry that I was not the father you thought I should be. I was certainly not the father I thought I would be. I know that you were bothered by the moves we made during your junior high and high school years, and I'm sorry that your mother's and my marriage failed. I'm not sure what happened. I know that there was a time when there was love and passion and caring. I have often wondered when the baggage got so heavy that there was no return. And I know that it seemed to affect you more than the other two children." I went on to say, "I remember when you were just 4 or 5, I snapped at you for something. You would stop whatever you were doing and you would walk to my side with your head hanging down, your lower lip trembling. And you would stand there until your mom and Billy and Kathy would be laughing hysterically, until I apologized to you for snapping at you for whatever you did. So I am apologizing to you again. I love you without judgment and wish you happiness. Love, Dad." I mailed that letter, and I waited. And a week or so later, I got an email from Meredith, and it said, "Dad, I opened your letter tonight, and it's the best piece of mail I ever got." So as Reverend McGee said, "May no heart be troubled by things unsaid." You can get a lot out of a sermon. When my kids were teenagers, everything was awesome. I got very tired of hearing everything from the latest song to a trip to the mall was awesome. I once told my kids that maybe a nuclear explosion was awesome, and that for sure the Grand Canyon was awesome. I know that because anyone who will listen to me knows that I have backpacked through the Grand Canyon 9 times. It's one of the few places that gives the word awesome some meaning. But to be sure, the Grand Canyon wasn't always awesome. It took a billion or so years of the Colorado River and the other elements shaping the canyon. So just maybe if you give me a billion years and enough sermons that I can be shaped into something awesome as well. A few years ago, Mary Fran and I attended the UU Church in Ventura, California. The minister was a lady named Jan Christian, an interesting name for a UU minister. She told a true story about giving sermons and satisfying her congregation. And it seems there was a guest speaker one Sunday, and following that sermon, Reverend Christian and the speaker were greeting members as they exited the sanctuary. A longtime member stopped and shook the speaker's hand and said, "That was wonderful. I come to church to be fed, and you fed me." She thought for a moment, she looked at Reverend Christian, and she said, "She feeds us too, but it just doesn't always taste good." So one can get a lot out of a sermon. I know that I get a lot from sermons, and I hope you all do too. And while the messages are different from week to week, they have one thing in common, and that is generally that they cause me to open my eyes and open my heart. And every week I leave here feeling more benevolent and peaceful.